We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful, albeit blustery and chilly New York City, my man Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, but I'm a little bit wistful, not for the season, although I am wistful for the regular season, but I believe it's 1 year ago this weekend that we went to Fargo.
Wow. Has it been a year already? Right?
Well, so Colgate beat James Madison in the first round.
Right. Right.
Even though North Dakota State, I think, yeah, they had a bye this year and then took down, Nichols last week?
Sure.
I think this was the weekend, so maybe this was the quarters or whatever it is of the SCS playoffs that we attended, and it has been a year. Yeah.
I stand by the fact that that was the coldest I've ever been at a football game. Certainly at a tailgate. Certainly at a tailgate.
Yeah, it was totally nice inside the Fargo Dome, wasn't
it? It was so cold outside, and everybody there was completely unfazed except for us.
That's correct. And we live in cold weather places. We had a terrific time. And I remember it because the attention of the college football world was, you know, somewhat on the game because we were being tweeted because our pal Kevin Brown was calling the game and made mention to the Solid Verbal and coming out to Fargo.
We were running the SI.com Instagram story account.
Correct.
We were doing that. But outside, I cannot put into words how next level cold that was.
It wasn't super windy, so it was just cold. I didn't find it unbearable, but as soon as you started mixing around with people at North Dakota State, everybody's like, yeah, you want a club sandwich? Everything's great. You want some bourbon cocktail that we've whipped up? Man, it's just another weekend here in Fargo. And we're like, we are so soft. We are so very, very soft. It was great.
It was great. Well, thank you for bringing up that memory. You can go back on our website and listen to that whole escapade. It was a lot of fun going out to Fargo. Check out the Bison in person. Bison. In the interim, though, hello, welcome to the postseason. I'm Ty, he's Dan. This is the Solid Verbal. As we've been saying all year long, we're going to be broadcasting through the offseason. Doesn't mean we're going to stop. Might not broadcast quite as frequently, but that is to be expected. Over the next couple weeks, we're going to be previewing all the bowl games.
Yes, and recapping.
Not going to do that tonight. We're going to start up this coming weekend, but suffice to say, there's a lot of content that we have to get through as we get you ready for bowl season. There is a bowl pick'em pool, solidverbal.com/pick'em, or if you go to solidverbal.com, there's a big yellow banner at the top. You can click through and join it there. We'll also make sure we post it on across We'll also make sure we post it across all of our social channels, but encourage everyone to get on in on the action. It's a lot of fun. On the Sunday show, I think we'll unveil our separate strategies for attacking a confidence pool, but we'd encourage everyone to subscribe if they haven't already.
Yes, I do really enjoy bowl season. You know, for as much attention as it gets as being a group of exhibitions and not mattering, and it doesn't mean anything for the next season, it's football on TV when in a lot of places it's very cold out and you might be spending time with people you're close to that you might not necessarily want to be close to. I can't speak to that because I'm very fortunate, but I understand that for some people, football and bowl games are a terrific escape. So let's all be in this together and enjoy like the Gasparilla. The Gasparilla or the Bad Boy Mowers or whatever bowl. Let's all do it together and have fun. I like it.
As for tonight, though, Dan.
Yes.
Tonight, we're going to go through the mailbag.
We are.
Asked if people out there could send in questions. It's been a long time since we did a good, honest-to-goodness Q&A, emptied out the mailbag, really covered some ground. So we're going to do that tonight. Figured the first show after the season's a good one to do that before we jump right back in this coming weekend and talk about all things bowls. Before we get there, though, Dan, we have breaking news.
We do. All sorts of new coaching hires. I just saw the most recent, well, there were a couple recent ones. Steve Adazio to Colorado State, Willie Taggart to FAU, Chad Morris to become Auburn's offensive coordinator. Marcus Arroyo, Oregon's offensive coordinator, is now the head coach officially of the UNLV Rebels. And who am I missing? Chip Long, Notre Dame. They've gone their separate directions. It's a conscious decoupling.
Conscious decoupling.
Uh-huh.
I think that's accurate. Did we mention Ricky Ronnie officially taking the ODU job? We may have mentioned that on the...
I think we did in passing, yeah.
On the last show, but Ricky
All
Ronnie
two and
taking
a half
that
of our
job?
Teams. Yeah.
Two and a half of our teams, yes. Yeah.
Looking
so,
for offensive coordinators.
A lot to come on that front, for sure. Who knows if we'll have another surprise this coaching season. I suppose it's possible, but in the interim, we've got a lot of coordinators on the move. And for sure, we'll be talking more about the Oregon and Notre Dame jobs, I'd imagine, on this show.
And Penn State job. That's a really good job with how well the Nittany Lions have recruited, right?
For sure.
Do you think that they are going to, and somebody sort of asked this already, and I don't know if this will go right into our Q segment before our A's, but do you think they promote from within? Do you think James Franklin goes outside for some fresh eyes? What do you think?
I would love for them to go outside.
Okay.
I would love to go outside the box a little bit. There's a dude from Slippery Rock.
Whoa.
If you really want to dig deep in the hat, I forget his name. I should know his name because I've been reading about him all year. But
what about whoever is running the Muhlenberg offense?
Yeah, man. Actually, who's ever running the Muhlenberg defense might be the better play.
That's true. Penn State's defense, I think, is in a pretty good place. Not the best ever, but they're in a pretty good place.
Pretty good place. James Franklin's got a pretty good track record for going outside.
Yes.
When he's going outside.
Speaking of going outside, Steve Adazio has never coached west of the Mississippi.
Okay.
And now he is going west of the Mississippi. I just brought up his Wikipedia page. He went to Central Connecticut, coached at Western Connecticut State, coached high school in Connecticut, Syracuse to Notre Dame to Indiana to Florida to Temple to Boston College to Colorado State.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say, though, that Bronco Mendenhall coming east of the Mississippi and having the success he's had at Virginia has opened my eyes a bit to that whole geographic argument that I know we've made in the past.
Well, I mean, Oregon has a coach who has almost exclusively coached in the Southeast at Alabama and Miami and FIU and places like that. It's possible, but it was 35 years of it. So that's a long time for an assistant principal like Steve Adazio.
Any other noteworthy topics?
Well, the
here.
Willie Taggart thing is notable because he's jumping to a good job, a job that's not a fixer-upper like he's had to do all these times as he gets new jobs. And so hopefully he can just focus on maintenance rather than trying to fix a program that's sort of been gutted. So I think I'm optimistic that FAU can keep succeeding. No? Yes?
I think Willie Taggart's a good hire. Yeah. So
yeah.
Originally, there were rumors that he was interested, Willie Taggart was interested in his old job, USF. Mm-hmm. Don't know if that interest was reciprocating. I'm guessing it wasn't because they hired Jeff Scott instead.
Right.
So Jeff Scott gets a job. He comes over from Clemson. Willie Taggart, presumably looking for another job in Florida, he gets FAU.
Right.
Not a bad gig.
No, not at all. And I think USF is probably looking to build something more long term. And it's probably fair to assume that Willie Taggart's track record indicates he's not necessarily a long term guy, win or lose.
No, right? He might have to be at this point.
He might have to be at this point.
Might not have a choice.
Track record suggests that there might be concern wherever he might have success. Also, Northwestern hires a new offensive coordinator. This normally would not be huge news, but their offense was so bad. It should be noted that they have not just hired a handyman, they've hired a general contractor to come in and really get out all of the warts and the termites. And there's a lot of load-bearing issues with the Northwestern offense that need addressing. And Mike Bajakian, I don't know how you pronounce it. He was at Boston College, did a good job improving the Eagle offense, did a good job. And I know the Tennessee team wasn't great in 2014, but that offense was better in 2014 than they were in 2013. So has a track record. I think he was at Cincinnati before that and did a decent job with their offense. So hopefully Northwestern can get that that deal back up to competence.
Can't do any worse, right?
No. It would.
I mean,
I couldn't imagine what a worse offense would look like at a place that can attract decent enough talent.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. So there you go.
The only other thing that I have. See about Jim Delaney? Maybe talk about an 18 playoff, Dan?
Jim Delaney will do whatever is best for Jim Delaney. And you leave a Big Ten team out of the playoff even once, like has happened, then he is open. He said something like, you know, I didn't like when there were computers, but I don't know if I like people either.
Right. No, he's just keeping his options open. Jim Delaney does not at all look like Robert Duvall. We've discussed this before.
Jumbo Duvall, though. I think he's bigger, isn't he?
Probably.
Yeah. I think he's protein shake Duvall.
Whichever Duvall you prefer, this one seems to be warming to the idea of an expanded playoff, which we knew was going to come at some point. Let's be honest. Whether you like it or not, maybe right. That's the first question we could take because I saw okay. We got one on that very topic. Any other news before we jump in here?
We have Heisman finalists. That's happening. We're recording this Wednesday at 5 p.m. That's happening Saturday. We've had a couple of early awards being given out, but I don't know, nothing that we need to stop everything down for. And we have a bunch of good questions here.
One final news tidbit, Dan.
Yes.
Dan, time, help, I need picks of the week.
It's not a normal week. We're talking about things as if the season's over, and for all intents and purposes, it is. But there is one other game that we need to discuss, that we have to discuss. It's Army-Navy. It's this weekend. They play it in Philly.
Right.
Navy is obviously the favorite here, being so they were a much better team throughout the course of the year. But any thoughts on this football game?
I think I feel pretty good about Navy.
Yeah?
Navy's been a fun watch. Obviously, they've gotten to be a lot better on offense. They're a top 10 Danalytic team in just points per drive. I know I love that stat. But defensively, they took a nice step up as well. And Army has just been a mess. They've just been too sloppy. The game this year is where?
It's at Philly.
It's in Philly.
Yeah, it's at the link.
Yeah, we got a question about Philly food. Maybe we'll get to. What's the spread?
10.5 in favor of Navy.
I'm going to give those points. Yeah.
You're giving the points.
You always like taking in this game.
I always take the points in this game. I don't know statistically how it shakes out, but I hate giving points in a game like this. Such a big rivalry.
We disagree. Also, Friday night, 3 FCS playoff games. NIU at James Madison. Austin Peay at Montana State, Montana at Weber State, and Illinois State, North Dakota State. Any strong thoughts about any of those games?
I have no strong thoughts at all, other than the Muhlenberg Mules at Scotty Wood Stadium on Saturday. Not sure if I'll make it up, but
against North Central.
North Central from Illinois, yeah.
Slippery Rock, Minnesota State. The Johnnies of St. John's against Wisconsin Whitewater, 2 12-1 teams.
Uh-huh,
that's
uh-huh.
A pretty action-packed. That one's on ESPN3. Watch ESPN, ESPN+, whatever. There's a lot of good football. Let's watch.
We have a bunch of good questions. We asked the Verballerhood if they could please send a message to us.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know what your questions are. Of course, you can get in touch whenever you'd like at solidverbal@gmail.com. There's also a form on our website. And there are also myriad social channels that you can pursue. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Did we post on Reddit?
We did post
on Reddit. We posted on Reddit.
A bunch of questions from Reddit.
So any which way you can get in touch with us if you've got something to say. What is our first question, Daniel?
Do we have the sound that we can play or no?
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
There it is.
On the song. I like my version better.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to that playoff question. Let's kick
Adam?
It off. Yes.
All right. Let's lead here with Adam. He says, Dan has pretty clear thoughts on the college football playoff, but I'm interested in what he believes is the best option. BCS or go back to polls? So that would be the old system in which there were conference alignments for, say, the Rose and the Sugar and the Orange and the Peach,
right,
or whatever.
So
I would say bring back the Blockbuster Bowl. One,
obviously.
Absolutely.
If we could play a bit of the newlywed game here, my understanding.
The AutoZone Liberty Bowl?
Get in the zone, right?
Yeah, always.
My understanding of what you would prefer is go back to polls.
I think that's my preference, not in terms of it being an actual good answer to find a national champion, but I think it's the answer for what would be the most entertaining postseason in college football that would also put a lot of weight on what I believe to be the best part of college football, which is September, October, November, and things getting crazy at the end of the season with the polls and whatever, the rankings. So that's my personal preference because I think I am looking at this holistically and just what would be the most fun package for college football. Because ultimately, we've decided that a national championship means something. But does it tie? Like if only 7.5 teams are capable of winning it because of the way they're built and how much money they have to, you know, pay coaches and build facilities and, you know, travel for recruiting, things like that. Why does the national championship matter as much as it does? Why is there so much weight put on it? Why are we whether it's game day or the Fox show or our show or anybody who talks about national college football, there's this idea of who's your top four? You go on the radio, I go on the radio. We get asked this in March. Who's your top four? Who do you have?
Right.
And there's something to me that, and I've explained this in a number of shows, but in terms of the best solution, there is no best solution. If you want to go to 8, sure, those 8 teams in that tournament, how many games is that? That would be 4, 2, and 1. It would be 3. It was 7 games.
7
right?
games, yeah, 7 games.
7 games. They'd be fun. It'd be good TV. But suddenly, you get a situation where your Ty Hildenbrandt, say, conference championship weekend is like, yeah, LSU's in no matter what. They're not falling out of the top 8. You get more of that. So we have more inconsequential games late in the season, which I'm just against.
Okay. Well, I just still cannot get my head around your logic on this one. And you're entitled to it, but I don't get it. If the national championship doesn't matter, then right. Why do any of the games matter? Why even play if the
because
ultimate
it's a regional
goal
sport and you have
if
rivals
the to ultimate goal is not to win the game and not to win the championship, why are they playing the games at all? Like there
win
has to be meaning. There has to
win
be meaning at the end of this. And in every other sport, in literally every other sport, we're playing for a championship.
But
in some way, shape, or form, unless you're talking peewees where everyone gets a ribbon, which this is not, you're playing for a championship at the end. And we may disagree on how you crown that champion.
Yeah.
But the foundation of your argument here is that the championship does not matter. And that still, to this day, after years of arguing about this, is not something I can get my head around.
Ty, which year featured your favorite Premier League playoffs?
They don't have playoffs.
Oh, sorry. They don't have playoffs. Sorry. The biggest sport in the world is the one exception that doesn't have. They have tournaments.
They have tournaments. They also have a league with 20 teams, and they can play each other over the span of a season.
Sure.
We can't do that in college football. We can't do that because there are 130 teams.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Now, we have talked about our elaborate method for crowning a champion.
Right.
Which would occur over a 10-year period, everyone eventually playing everyone in a mass round-robin format.
Yeah, yes.
I'm open to discussion on that one. But since that is not going to be the case anytime soon, we're just going to have an impasse here. We fundamentally disagree on whether a championship has value or not.
Let me ask you this, though. How much did you care about a national champion when you learned about college football? You're just hoping Notre Dame wins. Right?
I care a great deal about the national championship.
No, I'm saying now you do, but I'm saying when you first got into football, when you first got into college football, when you're 12 years old, you're just watching Notre Dame games to hope they win.
I was watching every game, Dan. I was not just watching Notre Dame. Come on.
Right. But the idea is we only talk about, we don't care about other sports. College football is a unicorn. It's the greatest. And it's not the greatest because of its postseason. It's the greatest because of its season. That's what should
that I would agree with. That I would
on.
Agree with.
Okay.
That I would absolutely agree with. And
all right. So I'm
you
saying
know, we're
lean
gonna...
into the importance of that. And don't worry. Think about, let's just treasure what college football is instead of what it isn't. How about that?
Well, you're steering into the whole exhibition side of things, which
sure.
is what this playoff tried to get away from.
Right.
And I am saying quite the opposite, that it was too much of an exhibition sport for too long, and it's long overdue that we have some justified way of crowning a champion.
And
I'm fine with them
expanding it. You fell in love with college football the way it was, right?
I fell in love with it the way it was,
okay.
and I'm even more in love with it now.
Oh, no way. There's no way.
Next topic. Next topic.
All right. Our next question, and I'll get away from some. We have a couple other college football stuff, but or college football playoff stuff. But how about this? How much of Lincoln Riley's success at Oklahoma and Ryan Day's initial success at Ohio State is due to having smooth in-house coaching transfers? So,
not transfer
in that sense, but are we going to see more of this in the future? Related, how likely is Jimmy Lake likely to maintain Washington, if not on Oklahoma and Ohio State's level? So I guess maintain Washington
yeah.
as occasional jump up and get to the playoff, contend for the Pac-12, you
right.
know, once every 3 years
well,
or something
we,
like that.
We sort of answered this on the Twos Cruise, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, we
but
sort of answered it on
let's
Twos
talk
Cruise.
About let's talk about internal transition.
Well, I mean, the smooth in-house transition is important, but doesn't it help to have that kind of talent like they do at Ohio State and Oklahoma?
Definitely.
Like, both guys have done a great job, but they also started with presumably that 27-mile runway from Fast and Furious 6. That helps, too. So it's a combination of factors for both those guys. There are plenty of instances where a coach took over a very talented team and then deep sixed it over the course of 5 years. I'm
right.
looking at you, Larry Coker. Lincoln Riley clearly has not done that. Lincoln Riley has, you know, carved out his own little place in college football at this point, and that's why you hear his name rumored for jobs maybe in the NFL at some point.
Right.
We'll have to wait and see on Ryan Day. Ryan Day has been a name that's been up and coming in the coaching ranks forever.
Mm-hmm.
I would find it very hard to believe that things are going to turn around in a negative way for him at Ohio State. So I think it's a combination of factors. That's sort of a long-winded way of saying it's both. It's talent, and it's a smooth transition from A to B.
So I'll drill down a little bit deeper. And you root for schools in Penn State and Notre Dame that almost exclusively look to the outside. One, because Penn State had a coach forever and ever, and that ended abruptly. So they pretty much had to go to the outside, given that situation.
Sure.
And then they do it once again, once Bill O'Brien leaves to hire James Franklin, who has connections to PA, but was not on that staff. My school that I root for almost exclusively looks inside the program. Mike Bellotti was an inside hire. Chip Kelly was an inside hire. Mark Helfrich was an inside hire. Willie Taggart outside. And then Mario Cristobal inside once again. So we have different vantage points as it relates to the teams we root for. And I'll say that there is an unquestionable advantage of just knowing where the bathrooms are. And that's to be taken in a literal and figurative sense. Just there's something about you're not displacing your family again. You don't have upheaval. You're not going home to a teenager saying, "I hate you, Dad. I miss all my friends." There is something quaint and tranquil about continuity just from a personal standpoint. And then you know which coaches you like and don't like. And you can say, you know what? It's been great working with you, but I think I'm going to go a new direction, defensive line coach, offensive coordinator, whatever. You already have a sense of the players, who you like, who you don't like, where you need to recruit better, where you can pull back on a little bit. You're talking about the runway, and I think that's exactly it, but it's in every single room of the facility.
Yeah.
And you're right about the talent with Ohio State and Oklahoma, and I think to a lesser extent, but still to a reasonable extent, at Washington. I think Jimmy Lake should have a lot of success early because program's stuck. There are really good, they've recruited well. There are good defensive players. I know they need to make adjustments on offense, but Jimmy Lake is better prepared to diagnose what he wants to do on offense than if they brought in whoever, if they brought in PJ Fleck to replace Chris Peterson or Matt Campbell or whoever. And that's what you should see them flirting with double-digit wins in these next couple of years, because he knows where the bathrooms are.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's not a common occurrence that you see a guy who is taking over and is just an instant disaster. Taking over a good situation and it's instantly horrible.
Right.
Usually...
Like, Helfrich took a few years.
Right. Yeah. Usually it takes a little bit before you start to see that manifest. Clearly it hasn't happened at Oklahoma. I don't think it's likely to happen at Ohio State, but we got to give it time. Where are we going next?
And by the way, the interesting thing with both Ryan Day and Lincoln Riley is they'd been around.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Lake is a Peterson, not lifer, but he spent a lot of time with him at Boise and Washington. So his network of what works and what doesn't work, his network of assistants isn't quite as large. I still think he should succeed. Next, you get to redo one play this year. This is from Willie. Auburn's last second catch versus Oregon. North Carolina's 2-point attempted play against Clemson. Alabama's 1 second before half versus Auburn. Michigan catches the touchdown versus Penn State. That was what, Ronnie Bell in the end zone? That would have tied it.
Sure.
I believe it was 28-21 or something else.
I know which one you're picking.
Would you redo?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Verone McKinley breaking up that pass, the Oregon defensive back.
I'm gonna say North Carolina's 2-point attempt against Clemson, because I love the cojones it takes to go for two.
Sure.
In that situation, go for the win. Almost as much as I hate the speed option play that they ran against a really fast Clemson defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the gumption to go for two there. If you're Mack Brown, got a shot, take the shot. Didn't work out, but it was still a hell of a lot of fun.
Not a lot of people know this, but that play where a quarterback rolls out and a tight end shows that he's in for extra protection, then leaks out to the weak side for a wide open catch, that has never failed. It's a 100% successful play on any level it's ever been run.
You know, why didn't they run the Philly special?
It's a good question.
Has that play ever failed?
I have not seen. I mean, sure it has. I'm sure it's failed spectacularly because there are a lot of levers and pulleys to it.
I would love to know if PFF has a stat on that. Seriously.
On some sort of Philly special or King of Prussia special, some sort of iteration.
That play feels like it works 100% of the time.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
It's food for thought.
Will Mike Norvell have the Noles above 500 next year, not including a bowl game?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah.
Good question. This is from Michael.
Yeah.
First off, the non-conference schedule includes both Boise and Florida, which are tough games.
Yes.
I think they're at Boise.
And West Virginia, right?
And West Virginia, sure.
In Atlanta, yeah.
So they've got those three, which at least two of those three are going to be tricky.
Mm-hmm.
They also get Clemson. They also get Louisville. They get Miami, both on the road. Both of those teams.
As they do every year, but yeah.
Right. Both of those teams should be improved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they lose all those games. I feel pretty good about 7-5 just solely on talent alone, but I think the schedule dispels any notion of Mike Norvell going like 9-3, 10-2. It's kind of a tough schedule.
It's what, a third offensive coordinator in 3 years. It's the talent level obviously isn't up to where it was, 8-7 years ago, whatever. I think they'll be okay. I am optimistic. Quarterback is still going to be such a huge issue for me. God, the Sam Howell decommitment. Whoa.
Yeah, it hurts,
that's
right?
Just enormous. I think so. Yeah, I think they can go 7-5. It's year one. I don't have what Mike Norvell did at the moment in front of me. I'm bringing it up right now in year one at Memphis, but he was taking over a much more successful program.
It was a different
Justin
situation.
Justin Fuente left that in such a good place.
It
they
was
went
a
8-5.
Much different situation. Yeah, 8-5.
8-5, yeah.
8-5. So, look, I like Mike Norvell. Right. I think it's a good move. I don't know if he's got the personnel in place to run the system he wants to run. We'll find that out in due time. But the schedule does not strike me as a cream puff schedule. So 7-5 right now, if I'm betting in late December or early December, whatever this is now, losing track of time, 7-5 would probably be my early bet.
Yeah, I don't think Cam Akers will be back.
No. Next year. I hope not, for his sake.
I really do hope not. I don't think he's declared yet, but it's hard to imagine he won't, because it's time. There's nothing more he can really do at Florida State, given the line that's going to be in front of him once again. I'm sure it'll be improved, but it's time.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes, just be on the strength of Norvell.
Yes.
But we haven't seen all of his hires, so it's an incomplete take at the moment.
Okay.
Joshua, does the Big 12 have the best pool of head coaches right now versus all the other Power 5 conferences, or just every conference, top to bottom? I'm going to say no.
Okay. Who's better?
Well, I guess, first of all, let's define best pool of coaches. I don't know how you would define it. I will offer, have proven that they can win 8 games in a Power 5 conference.
Okay.
As a head coach. So the Big 12 to me is sort of incomplete.
Okay.
Les Miles won a national championship. Do you have faith Les Miles can win 8 games at Kansas?
No.
That's obviously the low part. Matt Wells? Incomplete.
Okay.
No idea.
Right.
Neil Brown? Incomplete. No idea. I mean, we look at Neil Brown, we look at Matt Wells, you know, Chris Kleiman as people who have potential, but there's too much. I mean, we love Lincoln Riley. Current iteration, Gary Patterson, and the decisions he's made at offensive coordinator? I don't know. It's not in a great place, but Gary Patterson's track record says yes, he is an addition to a good pool.
Right. It is.
It's not the Pac-12.
Yeah. I mean, what the Big 12 has going for it is that it's only 10 teams.
Yes. So it's more of a percentage thing.
It's so hard to go against the SEC.
You think so?
Oh. It starts at the top with Saban, who everyone is trying to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, LSU had a renaissance year. I don't know if I'm confident in Ed Orgeron moving forward. I'm confident in their ability in this playoff, but this is really the first year where he's broken out. So I'd like to see him maintain it, but LSU is an 8-win entity. I feel pretty good about that year in and year out. Dan Mullen is doing quick work at Florida. Yeah. Gus Malzahn has been pretty good for a while at Auburn. Winning 8 games has not really been an issue.
Right.
You know, on the other side of things, I think Jeremy Pruitt did a really good job second half of the year at Tennessee.
Yeah. But second half of the year was a very different schedule than the first half of the year. But yeah.
Sure.
You lose the way he did those first 2 weeks. It's hard to really sing praises this season.
Mark Stoops has done miracles at Kentucky. I'm not even mentioning Jimbo Fisher yet. So I just think the amount of ammo in the coaching ranks in the SEC is really tough to beat.
I would say the top of the SEC is incredibly tough to beat. The depth of the ACC, as down as it was this year.
The ACC is sneaky. I was looking at them too. It is sneaky.
There's not, Jeff Collins is an unknown right now as a Power 5 coach, but, and obviously Boston College has not officially hired anybody. But in terms of what these guys have proven, and I would put Mike Norvell above some of those Big 12 guys with what he's done at Memphis this season, leading them to a Cotton Bowl. The Manny Diaz thing is the other question, but Justin Fuente, Bronco Mendenhall, Pat Narduzzi, it was okay, but if that bar is 7-8 wins that in a Power 5 conference, he's gotten there.
Yeah.
Mac Brown has proven it in a Power 5 conference. He's David Cutcliffe has proven it.
All Dave Doran does is win 7 or 9 games.
Or he wins or loses 7 games.
That's right.
In the ACC. Dino Babers has proven it.
No, it's not bad. ACC is sneaky good.
I think just in terms of high floor, I might have, and then Dabo, obviously, who might be the best coach in the sport.
Can I ask a different coach question than I see here from Joe?
Yes.
Does the hype around Matt Campbell at Iowa State seem to be fizzling, or is he still destined for a program bigger and better eventually?
He is. I think he's being patient.
Yeah.
I think he's being patient for Michigan State, Penn State, something like that, where, you know, obviously he's from the Midwest, and I think he will have his choice of a large Midwestern job if he continues taking Iowa State to bowl games.
Yes,
and hanging
absolutely
with teams like Oklahoma and Texas, beating teams like Texas, murdering teams like TCU for as many down weeks and weird losses that the Clones will have. And, you know, you need to beat Iowa at a certain point. their schedule is not difficult in the following years. I think they only have Iowa in terms of very challenging Power 5 teams. So that should be a nice cushion, even though the Big 12 plays 9 conference games. I think we're just plateauing with Matt Campbell as attractive dude to take over your large program.
And that's my point. I don't think it's fizzling. Yeah. I just think the hype has been normalized at this point.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right. He is in a position where he can be as picky as he wants to be about his next gig, because Iowa State would happily keep him until he's 70.
Sure.
30 years of Matt Campbell, sign me up.
Yeah.
They would take that in a heartbeat. The truth of the matter is, though,
can you imagine a 73-year-old with that crazy curved hat?
Woo! Matt Campbell had an 8-4 regular season last year. Mm-hmm. Last year. Before that, you had to go back 18 years to find a regular season as successful. This is not a place that is easy to win at. Seven-win seasons are not growing on trees at Iowa State, and now he's done it for 3 consecutive seasons. So this is definitely still a guy who's going to be in demand when he chooses to be in demand.
Right. The only thing I'd be worried about, and we got a question about Willie Fritz with this too, you know, why? How is Willie Fritz still at Tulane? How has nobody scooped him up? There, if he does throw in a clunker of a year, if he loses a quarterback in week 3 and they end up 5-7 because of weird depth issues, transfer issues, or whatever, then he's going to need a prove it year, not to stay at Iowa State, but to say, okay, no, this guy's still good. This guy's still good. I think it sort of happened in Iowa State is not a G5 program, but this is more of a comparison to Willie Fritz. Everybody said, oh man, Matt Wells, destined for big things. And then Utah State kept getting hurt at quarterback year after year after year. And I think he had a great year with the Aggies in like 2014. And then they threw in a bunch of 5-7, 6-7, whatever type seasons. And it's not that people thought any less of him, but the margin for error is so much slimmer at a place like that. So when he finally did have that double digit win year last season, then it was like, I got to take advantage now.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I think if he does slip, if Matt Campbell and the clones slip and have a clunker year, he will need that prove it year. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. He's recruited pretty well. I think he has a blue chip quarterback coming in this next class. It's always going to be tough to out recruit teams that are that close or inside Texas. But I foresee this continuing for the clones.
So Bucks Guy, that's the name we have here. Bucks Guy.
Yeah.
Requested that I read the full name of this bowl.
Okay.
And he said, I might be headed to the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
As I'll be in the area for Christmas. This game's in Tampa.
Yeah.
What is the word on this game? Any fun? Seems like it'll be a blowout. So this is UCF and Marshall. I agree that it will be a blowout. I think UCF's about a 17-point favorite. I'll put a fair amount of confidence points on this one. All I would say to you, sir, Bucks Guy, Mr. Bucks Guy, I'm assuming, this bowl game has previously been sponsored by titans in the business world, such as Magic Jack, Beef O'Brady's, and BitPay. So regardless of the final outcome of the game, maybe it's a blowout, maybe it isn't, just walk around, breathe that rarefied air of Raymond James Stadium, Dan.
Can I ask you a question about sponsorships in light of both your comment and the fact that the New Mexico Bowl almost got sponsored by a company that doesn't technically exist, or at least exist yet?
We talking CPM rates here? What are we talking
about? No. My question to you is, if there is a desperate bowl game that is sure it's going to sell a lot of tickets, but it still needs a sponsor to round out the books, to cover all of its costs, whatever, how inappropriate do you think, I mean, I'm sure there are rules. I don't know if it's an NCAA thing. I don't know if it's an ESPN thing. I don't know if it's a specific bowl that has rules about who they would accept sponsorship from.
Mm-hmm.
I only thought of this because Tampa is, so I've heard, the strip club capital of America.
Sure.
So I don't think they would take a sponsorship from a strip club. Would they take a sponsorship from, if there were some modern equivalent of like Maxim or FHM? Would they take a Hooters sponsorship?
I was going to say, would they take a Hooters sponsorship? I think they would.
Probably would.
I think they would, right?
Yeah. I think especially a smaller bowl that really just needs that infusion of cash to cover everything. I think you would do a Hooters bowl. Yeah.
Well, Dan, this is going to be the best segue ever. As you know, it's an exciting time for sports, but none more exciting than the NFL.
True.
Sophomore sensation Lamar Jackson is redefining what it means to be a dual threat quarterback. The odds on Jackson to win the MVP race were at 50-1 to begin the year. They have plummeted, making my bookie's prop selection more attractive than ever. Then next week, we've got a stacked UFC card, three championship fights in the 14th, all highly anticipated, of course, right in the betting capital of the world in Las Vegas. So people want to get in on the action. The best place to do so is my bookie. If you're that kind of guy, you want to get in and win a lot, try a parlay. You can combine some of the big favorites this week. Parlay is going to give you a bigger payout. My bookie's got more lines and better odds for the player than any other sports book around. If you join right now, they're going to match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000, which means if you deposit two, you get an extra one in free money to play with. All you got to do is use our promo code SOLID to activate the offer. Once again, that is promo code SOLID to get your extra cash from my bookie. Bet, win, get paid.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Do you have the breaking news sound?
I do. Okay. We're breaking news!
From 1995 to 1999, Hooters sponsored the Hula Bowl.
Oh, yes! That's right!
Yeah. I think the Hula Bowl is coming back, by the way.
Oh, I would love that.
The Hula Bowl is coming back. According to its Wikipedia page, the game was first played in 1947 to 2008 and is being revived following the 2019 season to be played at Aloha Stadium.
Beautiful.
The first time since... it's scheduled for January 26, 2020. So this is the an all-star game.
Yeah.
Not officially a bowl game. Also, Lee Corso did a Hooters commercial in 2011 where he put on the
I remember that.
Owl
I remember
mascot
that.
Head.
I remember that.
So there is connection. There is precedent.
I want
so, that's
not
a
only,
technical bowl game.
I don't just want the Blockbuster Bowl back. I want the Blue Bonnet Bowl back from the late 80s. Bring that back.
Good. The Copper Bowl. Get more people to Arizona.
Let's do it.
Okay. Next question. Who do you want to go to?
ND fan. Let's get this out of the way.
Oh, I'm ready.
Do you think Notre Dame is a coach away from the elite class like Georgia? When Georgia went from Mark Richt to Kirby Smart? It's a loaded question, Mr. ND fan.
Yeah.
How do you feel? How do you feel about this one, Dan?
So we're talking about a top three class. We're talking about a ton of five stars and like 75% plus blue chip ratio.
No, he says, do you think Notre Dame is a coach away from the elite class like Georgia?
Oh, the elite class. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so upper echelon,
the top rung. Okay.
Upper crust of college football. And he's comparing it to the Georgia situation when they went from Mark Richt to Kirby Smart.
I don't know who that is. I don't know who that coach is that's taking the Notre Dame job unless Urban Meyer's taking it in a year or two, which I guess it's possible. I think Notre Dame is in a place where they are getting good enough classes and it's just they need to go undefeated, essentially, maybe 11-1. To be in the conversation later on in the season, because as we saw this year, 10-2, and maybe this is just me liking, to see Notre Dame cause you agita, but did they feel sort of college football adjacent this year?
College football adjacent.
Yeah, college football like playoff adjacent. Even when they were good, it felt like we were never really having conversations about big Notre Dame games. I think partially because big Notre Dame games didn't really exist near the end of the year.
Well, they were out of it towards the end of the year.
Right. And so we are not talking about Notre Dame in a, well, if they beat Clemson in the ACC championship, then like if Notre Dame were in the ACC Coastal, we'd be talking about a Notre Dame Florida Sugar Bowl or Orange Bowl or whatever. Right.
Well, and part of that is the way that the schedule naturally worked out. That right. Stanford game to close out the year 6 months ago looked like it would be a lot bigger than it ended up being.
Definitely.
So just the natural rhythms of the season kind of took them in a different direction. But after they got drilled by Michigan, it was pretty much over. So,
yeah,
definitely down the stretch. We didn't talk a whole lot about Notre Dame. I think it's a fair question to ask. I know that there are many in the Notre Dame world that are asking that question. The caveat, though, is that, quote, being a coach away from elite is the ultimate white whale in college football. It worked at Georgia. It doesn't work at most places.
What state is Georgia located in?
Georgia.
It's in Georgia. It's easier to, I mean, Notre Dame is a big national brand and should be able to attract national talent. It's easier to attract that kind of class and get, or that kind of, excuse me, that just that kind of talent and that kind of momentum at Georgia than it is at Notre Dame.
There is a talent gap. A school like Georgia is deeper across the board. Slowly but surely, I think Brian Kelly has gotten Notre Dame in a much, much better spot in that department. In general, they're in pretty good shape. They're in pretty good shape. I think, as I said all year, they're a quarterback away. I think if they could get a better quarterback that...
Well, now they need a coordinator, too.
Well, now they need a coordinator. And maybe that coordinator will do different things with Ian Book. I don't know. But I think they're a quarterback away, a more dynamic quarterback away from maybe getting to that rung a little more consistently. But they're right there. They're knocking on the door.
I'd also say it's probably easier to attract a top flight coach to Athens, Georgia.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
It's a great place. Not that South Bend doesn't have its charms. Athens, Georgia is a great place.
Let's do a few more college football ones and then we'll go off topic.
How many years at minimum? This is Minnesota A-bomb. This is what I'm trying to come up with as this person's username. How many years at a minimum until we see a non-Clemson ACC champion?
Non-Clemson ACC champion.
Yeah. And I guess who is the most likely non-Clemson ACC
champion?
And how many years will it take for said team?
Man, that is tough. It's...
So nobody's going to be as talented in the short term, right?
No. No. I mean, the natural answer would be Florida State. Florida State's sort of that natural rival, but
that's
I don't
how
know.
How many years away?
I don't know.
It's probably 3 years.
At a minimum, 3 years.
Yeah.
Miami's another one that you could throw in there. They've got a promising freshman quarterback.
Do they?
We thought they did. We did a whole thing on Jaren Williams. We did a whole thing on him. But at a minimum, it's got to be 3 years for almost anybody in the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably 3 years. I think you can sneak into two. Okay, so we're looking at promising young quarterbacks. I think I see two, or no, I probably see three right now in the conference. That's the starting point you need. I see Hendon Hooker. I see McHale Cunningham.
Yeah.
And I see Sam Howell.
Sure.
Super promising young quarterbacks is a great place to start. I think the answer is Louisville's defense is far away. That is going to take time. Virginia Tech has a new defensive coordinator. Their offense still needs some tools.
You're not going to find anybody inside 3 years.
I think I could be talked into Virginia Tech within two.
Jeez.
Yeah, or I could actually be talked into, man, if Sam Howell keeps progressing.
Sam Howell's real good. He is real good.
You could, but see, the thing
is, defense, but
I think it's going to be easier to beat Clemson by just jumping up and getting them late September and having that game advantage and run the table in the Atlantic or just finish with a better record than it is to get Clemson at the end of the season and beat them in late November, early December.
That's fair.
That's why I almost favor Louisville here.
All right.
That if in 2 years they get to a place with transfers, whatever, McHale Cunningham still looks really strong, that might be why my answer is Louisville, actually.
All right. Next question. Where are we going?
Next question. Let's go to We had a bunch of good ones here. Did I skip? Yeah, I'm already on to the the non-college football. Let's go to Sam.
Sam, what up,
Near
Sam?
The top of page one. I always like that name.
Okay.
Why should any fan of a team other than Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, or Clemson think their team stands a chance of winning a national championship in the next 10 years? And let's pair this question with Trevor, who asks, when, in your opinion, does a program stop being considered a blue blood, or when does it move to blue blood status?
Okay. Wow.
Because if we are going to work under the presumption that you need to be or on the verge of becoming a, quote, blue blood to win a national championship, where you're going to have more depth than you did before because you're going to have to win two games on neutral sites and big stages, how do we determine blue bloodiness? And why would fans outside of those current strong, strong programs feel like they have a chance?
Well, that's a good question. And it really strikes at the heart of why we root for college football at all.
Yeah.
Certainly there's investment being made. There are beat writers writing about the investment being made, and there is no shortage of fan enthusiasm, especially in the beginning of the year when everyone's undefeated. So it's not hard for me to understand how people feel like they have a chance.
So without knowing who Sam roots for, because let's assume Sam roots for a team that's a rung or two below Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Clemson. Oklahoma, I would include in that, because if you make multiple playoffs, you're in that conversation.
Right.
You're a Notre Dame fan. You root for a team that's, you know, a rung below. I'm an Oregon fan. I root for a team that's a rung below.
How do we have a chance? We make the playoff and we get a chance to beat that team on the field.
No, but you know that those teams are operating at a higher level.
They're operating at a higher level, but you make the playoff, you have a chance. All you can ask for is to give yourself a chance.
So I think the futile nature of this question comes from the fact that we've seen, what, one team or one and a half teams from outside the general consensus of that blue blood group make the playoff.
Right.
We saw Michigan State. How'd they fare against Alabama?
They got smoked.
Not super great. It was super evident that they did not belong on the same field. We saw Oregon win a game against a Florida State team who, I will still argue, that Florida State team was clearly more talented. They were just a mess.
And that's my point. That's my point right there.
But we're talking about an Oregon team who had already been to a national championship, who had been to four straight BCS bowls at that point, or it was four out of five. It was a year after Chip left. They went to the Alamo Bowl in 2013, but Chip Kelly took Oregon to four straight BCS bowls. So it was not a matter of them, and I know Michigan State had success leading up as well, but there is an element of not exactly having the depth. As we saw, Oregon against Ohio State, they were down too many players. And Ohio State, even though they were down to their third string quarterback, that third string quarterback was plenty good. And so that's the issue. That's the issue at hand, is that teams generally outside of that grouping, plus Oklahoma, I would say, that he named, are just not going to be able to weather the grind of going through a season probably undefeated, because you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt with one or two losses, and then going through two of those teams.
Right.
So my answer to him is, I'm going to bring this full circle. National championship doesn't matter.
No.
You went into this season as a Notre Dame fan without any designs of Notre Dame going to the national championship, right?
I did not believe that they would be a contender.
But you watched and you enjoyed yourself. I mean, I shouldn't say that.
That doesn't mean I don't root for them to make it, though.
Right. Totally.
Which
there's the hope, but you shouldn't have designs of it. You just shouldn't.
It's just
not healthy.
It is the most illogical argument I've ever heard in my life. You should not root for your team to win the championship. I'm going to note that here. Okay.
And I should also mention Notre Dame made it to the playoff last year for the first time and didn't hang with the team that was put in front of them.
They did 1 point better than Alabama, though. The defense rests.
They did 1 point better than Alabama.
Moving on. Where are we going next?
My general point is, if you view the sport as having a point beyond the national championship, which I think you should, everybody should. And it's great if you root for one of those great teams. By all means, have laser focus on the national championship. There's 120 other teams. And I think it's totally good to just root for your team to play well.
Root for your team to play well. I don't want to call it like the hipster better than the championship argument, but that's the only way I could describe it. I just fundamentally disagree. I don't know.
That's okay. That's all right.
I just disagree.
Since we just brought it full circle and we're only doing a few more minutes of the show, why don't we designate this portion of the show to say, if you came here for college football talk,
yes, get out.
That was so amazing of you to download the show and to listen, and hopefully you liked at least part of it. We're going to move on to other topics now.
Yes. Let's hit a couple of these.
And it's been, you know what? It feels great to do so, Ty.
It does. It does.
All right. So we asked you to give us questions both about college football, and we also said, I think I said grocery stores, meeting your spouse's families, travel for bowl season, which I guess is college football related. I don't remember if there was, oh, and sleep.
Sleep.
Things, all things I feel passionately about.
Sure.
Let's start here. Brian says, compounding the joy I felt watching LSU's historic season was sharing it with my new girlfriend from Monterrey, Mexico.
Okay.
Been to Monterrey. It's great down there. She will be meeting my large Cajun family for the first time, and that includes watching the LSU-Oklahoma game. My question is, her English is just okay, and my family sounds like a sleepy Coach O.
Oh, no.
Which is a great way to describe people.
Okay.
What should my instructions be to my relatives? I am worried my family will overdo it and try too hard to communicate with her by talking slowly and loudly to her in English, when it will not, obviously will not help and only make her feel like a toddler.
Okay.
So my advice would be to just tell your family, hey, she's from somewhere else. She's decent at speaking English. Whatever she doesn't pick up naturally, she'll probably get by context clues. And if I'm nearby, I can always pipe up if I feel like she's looking really, really confused. But I'm assuming that Brian's girlfriend is a grown-up. And so it's basically, don't you, Brian, treat her like a toddler, and don't, and tell your family, just be like, just talk. Just, it's cool. She'll pick it up. It's fine.
Well, he has an asterisk here that she understands the rules of football because she grew up watching the Mexican college football Liga.
Yeah.
Which he said he had no idea has been around since the 1920s.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, football. Football is the universal language there. Start there and branch your way out. But no, don't treat her any differently, man.
Yeah, I would say, you know, maybe if there is a specific relative who is difficult to understand and might wade into weird waters, maybe don't leave her alone with him. Maybe be conscious of group settings involved so that you have an ear to the wall to jump in if need be. But otherwise, yeah. I if Ryan's smart enough to email our show, he's smart enough to have a cool girlfriend. So I assume everything will be good.
All right, where are we going next?
Brad wants to know. He's going to Japan. I love that we're going international with this one.
Okay.
Going to Japan over Christmas to meet my girlfriend's parents for the first time.
Nice.
And ask their permission to marry their daughter.
Whoa.
They don't speak English, so girlfriend will translate. Any suggestions on what to say? Mahalo, Brad in Hawaii. And actually, it turns out a coworker of Jody's who is from Japan but lives here is half Japanese, and I think her father, I forget, is his half Japanese, but her parents are in Japan, married a guy that's from the States. So they have a similar thing, although I think there's slightly less of a language barrier, but still a language barrier. What's your advice for Brad?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Now, you had a much more creative proposal than I did.
Okay, yeah.
Would it be too big a risk for Brad to just go hardcore into the Japanese language?
Right.
For the next couple weeks, however long.
And become fully fluent.
No. A one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Just learn how to say this one thing. Is that too much of a risk? Because I guarantee you the parents would appreciate it.
So I think you are completely on the right track, Ty. I would go a little further. I would say, and it appears, and I did some digging about Brad.
Uh-oh.
Sorry if this comes off as no, I didn't actually do any digging.
I have your social security number. No.
No, I think Brad lists a bunch of different places. Like he says Mahalo because he's Brad in Hawaii, but he's Hawaii via a couple of other international destinations.
Okay.
So I'd say steer into his international background. Find somebody at a local university. Find somebody on Reddit. Honestly, if there's a Verballer who's fluent in Japanese, what I would say
is... We have people in Japan who listen.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man. What is it? Brian Jones?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Long time listener. Maybe get at him. We can connect you.
We'll connect you.
It's weird that I know that.
This is weird. Right off the tip of my tongue. We know our listeners.
We do know our listeners. What I'm saying is connect with somebody who knows Japanese. Write out what you want to say. Your daughter means the world to me. I couldn't imagine being with anybody else. Really speak from the heart. Really go for it. It doesn't have to be, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs, but speak from the heart. Figure out what you want to say. Write it down. Find somebody fluent in Japanese and see if you can get them to translate and see if you can really get it phonetically, you know, pronounced for you.
Yeah.
And do a video of it. Make a video of you saying these things to her parents. Bring it on your phone. Show them. And also, if you can, and if you do get it translated in a letter that you can give to them. So that's what I did with Jody with an Eye's parents.
You translated into Japanese?
I did it all in Japanese. Okay. I actually did it both in Japanese and in a couple of other languages, just to be safe.
Farsi and whatnot, sure.
For sure. But I would also include in the video, and say this in the video in Japanese, I only learned this part, so I will be unable to answer any follow-up questions.
Well, that's an important disclaimer.
Yes.
That's an important disclaimer. So I guess, our answer here to Brad, yeah, it depends on how risky he wants to get. If he thinks he's going to be nervous.
I think you have to do that. I would do that myself. I would 100% do it. I would not advise it if I weren't going to do it myself. I'd say you have to do it on video because it also shows effort, right? You're not asking permission in the traditional sense. Like they're not probably not going to say no.
Well, the language shows effort regardless. You learn the language.
It shows effort.
It shows effort. Her parents will appreciate that. So whether you do it live and fight off the nerves or if you decide to go more of the production route and do the video, either way, it's got to be in Japanese. We agree on this.
It has to be in Japanese. And we will, if anybody's listening, is fluent in Japanese and willing to help Brad out, solidverbal@gmail.com. If not, maybe I can try to ask Jody's coworker. I'm sure we have Japanese listeners.
We will make this work for Brad.
We will. Okay. So I'm glad we agree on that. This was a question that was sort of contentious at one point in our show.
Really?
And it was about dogs.
Oh, boy. Oh, not this one again. Oh, no.
What's Ty's opinion? Because sleep was one of the things we offered questions about. What's Ty's opinion on letting his dog sleep with him?
Where's this? Who asked?
Dan Klobuchar.
Who asked this question?
I find it possibly less restful when one of my dogs sleeps with me, but it's nice in the winter to use one for heat.
For heat.
So.
Well, he's up in Minnesota, so he needs that.
Yes, and you sleep next to your wife, who I don't imagine provides a lot of heat because she's just a smaller lady.
Right.
So maybe your dog, a furry presence in your life.
Sure.
Does your dog sleep in bed with you ever?
Not yet, but she's just a pup. The solid puppy has woven herself into our lives.
Sure.
In such a way that I think we're at some point going to broach that subject and see if she's interested in coming up to sleep in the same room. Now, Room is different than bed. I don't want to box myself in here by saying if the dog decides to jump up and sleep at our feet, then I'm going to kick her off because I won't. I don't think I'd be too gung-ho on having her sleep next to me on the pillow.
Especially if you have allergy issues. That's 3 hours of dander right up your nose.
Yeah, that's not a good option. But
right.
I think I could be swayed into her at our feet.
What if we end up going back to a Dakota next year?
Right.
Okay? Maybe we go see the Jacks in South Dakota.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come back home. Kate's been home, obviously, a couple days without you. She was like, oh, the dog actually really likes sleeping in bed, and I don't like it. Are you putting up a fight? Is that a foot down issue for you that you're like, you know what? I don't know if that's my favorite thing, or are you just going to roll with it?
I mean, it depends if I have my spot in the bed, right?
Let's say it's an adjusted spot. Let's say the dog takes up part of the DMZ.
I don't know. I don't know. Such a good question.
Next question. Jason wants to know, how do you feel about Trader Joe's? Contention is that they don't carry many pantry staples, and therefore it's not one-stop grocery shopping. And we have a couple of grocery store questions. Cody asked about if we prefer regional or national chains, like a Winn-Dixie, Publix, Wegmans, or Walmart would be a national chain. Trader Joe's is a national chain. Is this decision based on price, service, convenience? Ty.
Right.
Are you a one-stop shopper, though?
You know my stance on Trader Joe's, right?
I know. You're afraid.
I'm not afraid.
That's what I've heard.
I think Trader Joe's tries a little too hard to be unique. And people swear by Trader Joe's. I know.
You go to a grocery store that has a pub in it, a craft beer pub, Ty.
Yeah, but it's a Wegmans.
Wegmans?
It's a Wegmans. My theory on Trader Joe's.
Do you even have a Trader Joe's near you?
I don't. No.
Okay.
I don't. My theory with Trader Joe's is that all of the prepared foods have one ingredient that does not belong. Because they're trying to be just a little too creative. So a sandwich with maybe like turkey and cheese and mayonnaise and maybe something crazy like peanut butter. Like,
right.
That's cranberry not a good example, sauce. But there's always one ingredient that is a little too avant-garde.
You're out on turkey peanut butter sandwiches.
I am. Believe it or not.
I'm not going to. Trader Joe's is not a sponsor. I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's, mostly because it's not terribly far from me. There are a couple of them in Brooklyn, so it's convenient. It's large. Grocery stores in New York are generally terrible. I don't want to go to Whole Foods. So I like it. There's a lot of private label stuff. It's not like they're making everything.
Sure.
You just got to know where they're strong and where they're not. But like, if their meat isn't that good, that's okay. There are butchers around. And so it's not one-stop shop. But I would argue that many grocery stores shouldn't be looked at as one-stop shop if you really care.
What's interesting, though, there is a store nearby that I would compare to a Trader Joe's.
Okay.
And you find that as you go to that store more frequently, you sort of talk yourself into the weird stuff. Like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll give that a shot. So I certainly get the allure. I've had bad experiences at Trader Joe's. But if there were one nearby, I'd probably go. I'm full of it.
We have a bunch of questions. Somebody asked about the weirdest place I fell asleep having an infant. It's not weird. The questioner, I think, is it Kelly? Old friend Kelly? And by old, I mean the number of years, not the person being old.
Sure.
It appears that she fell asleep in a dental chair, which would be tough.
I could do that.
I've fallen asleep on his playmat while playing with him, but not in public, not from being deprived of sleep. Other sleep questions. Best strategy for sleep with a newborn. You got to take turns. Got to take turns with your spouse. You got to get windows in. I would strongly recommend, not a sponsor, but sleep training. And the one we used is a program called Taken Cara Babies. It's a woman named Cara. And it was great. Little man was sleeping before Jody and I went back to work. Sleep, how do you accomplish it? Ty, how do you accomplish it?
Oh man, I'm not good. I'm the wrong person to ask this question to.
When have you slept the best? What has been your preparation?
My preparation has usually been about 5 nights of not sleeping well.
Sure. Deprivation, a not recommended strategy medically.
No, that's my answer. I don't have a
No, that's answer. Your answer. It's just that's the best time you sleep. I would say, you know, getting exercise, drinking plenty of water. Obviously, we're a pro hydration show. Maybe some meditation. You know, not looking at the blue light devices, your iPad, your phones, whatever, your tablets, TVs within like 20 minutes before bed. Do some reading.
There are some podcasts that I can listen to that'll put me to sleep ASAP.
But it's the maintenance. You got to stay asleep too.
Got to stay asleep. That's a problem.
Yeah. And breathing exercises.
Let's do.
Know, really, really go for it.
Let's do two more here Google. Quick.
Okay. Two more quick. Do you have any questions that you'd like to answer?
Here's one. No, I got one. From Heather, will you be continuing the Two's Cruise next season?
The answer is yes, with an asterisk.
We're
not revealing the asterisk yet.
That is correct. Factually correct.
There will be there will be a big picture show.
Yes.
That like we are doing this season.
But beyond that, we have no further comment, Heather. Sorry.
Zach wants to know where he should eat in Philly.
Oh, man. Don't ask me this question. You're South way more Philly. In tune with Philly restaurants.
I'm not that great, but South Philly Barbacoa for Mexican and Pizzeria, it's either Bedia or Bedia, Beddia, are on my hit list. And for a nicer place, Zahav, Zahav.
I like D'Alessandro's for cheesesteaks.
Mm, nice. What's your preferred cheesesteak arrangement?
I'm not a big cheese whiz guy.
Same.
To be honest, but I know since it's like the official Philly cheesesteak recipe, whiz wit is what I go with.
Mm.
So that's cheesesteak. Like you get the whiz and you get the onions.
Yeah, I would leave out the whiz. I would do like the white American cheese or whatever it is.
Sure.
The closer to food option. That's just me. Ryan wants to know if he goes to the Cotton Bowl. So I presume he is a Penn State or Memphis fan. Would it be better to stay in Dallas and go to Austin for a day? So I guess fly to Dallas and do a day trip in Austin, or stay in Austin and go to Dallas for the game? I would offer C, what we did, Ty.
Yeah.
I thought we did it great.
That was fun.
You only do the drive once this way because it's 3 hours, but that's, again, speaking of asterisk, there's traffic, there's construction.
It depends where you're coming from. It depends where you're coming from. Austin is not always the cheapest flight. So
true.
Depending on your situation and what you want to spend, I would agree with Dan. I would go to Austin and I'd make the trip up to Dallas for the game. And if
and stay
you can
in Dallas and fly out of Dallas.
Stay in Dallas, fly out of Dallas. But if you can fly to Austin, rent a car and drive up to Dallas, the drive might suck, but we enjoyed going to Buc-ee's. We had a lot of fun.
Sure.
On that drive up. So that was a good time.
Got some In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Texas's best burger chain. I'm such a bad person. If not, fly to Dallas. Enjoy Dallas. Bon Appetit, food restaurant city of the year. Go to the game. Hopefully have a good time. And then drive down to Austin, you know, for 24, 48 hours and maybe fly out of Austin. If that's a better option. Do what's affordable.
I have a question here to close out the show.
Okay.
This is actually final question. This is actually something that you and I need to talk about and haven't yet. We've long joked that we should do a board of directors meeting podcast where we talk shop and no one would listen, but it'd be for our own amusement.
Right.
So this is kind of in that vein, but you know, since we've made it through a full calendar year now, where are we going next year for our live shows? Where would you like to go? Or should we open it up to people? Let us know where we should go.
We should open it up to people. We haven't done a West Coast show yet.
We haven't.
I've loved all of our shows. The fact that people came in from all over to go to see us in Dallas, D.C. We had people throughout the South coming to see us in Atlanta, throughout the Midwest, see us in Chicago. Obviously, we've got a lot of people in the tri-state area here in New York. I'd like to do a West Coast show. If I had to go back somewhere, I had a great time in Minneapolis, by the way.
That was awesome.
I'd love to see Minneapolis in the summer.
It was awesome. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was great.
It was great, too, because we were indoors and they had heat.
It was a great brewery, great food, great pizza. Somewhere on the West Coast, LA or Portland or Bay Area, I don't know, somewhere like that. And then Chicago's real fun.
Chicago is fun. See, I have a really hard time with this one because it's around that time of year where we have to start
thinking
about
it. I'd like to do another New York one. That's easy for me.
I feel like I want to hit everywhere. I know we can't. But the West Coast is definitely on the short list. We've had people ask us. We'd love to do LA. Let us know where we should go next. There's no hard and fast answer. SolidVerbal@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts.
We'll go wherever we go, there will be air conditioning in the middle of August.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email. You can also hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and on the Solid Verbal subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com. Get in on the bowl pick 'em pool, the bowl confidence pool. We're going to start previewing games on Sunday. The first 12 or 13 games are going to be on the docket. We'll do our best to run through those, the bowl gifts, any oddities around these games that you might need to know, as well as our own personal formulas for dealing with how the hell do you pick this many games?
True.
So there you go. That's it over there. My good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt. We'll catch you all on the weekend. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week, all of your weekend. And in the meantime, stay solid.
Enjoy your Service Academy and FCF Saturday. Peace.